you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
You're listening to SupDoc, the premier podcast about documentaries hosted by two comedians. Hi, I'm Paco Romain.
And I'm George Chen.
And today, as part of our Mayhem series of true crime documentaries, we recap the 2015 documentary Amanda Knox, currently streaming on Netflix.
Amanda Knox was a young, pretty American student studying abroad in Italy, just soaking in the culture, until one morning in November 2007 when her roommate, Meredith Kircher, was found brutally murdered.
The small Italian town of Perugia became a media feeding ground for morbid details about Meredith, Amanda, and Amanda's boyfriend, Raphael. Amanda and Raphael were thrown into prison for 4 years for a murder they were ultimately acquitted of.
And curiously enough, it was just reported that Amanda Knox is going back to Italy for the first time since her arrest to participate in an Innocence Project conference.
You think that's a good idea, George?
No, I wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't do it either. And our guest to discuss this crime today is Sarah Ennie. Sarah's an author, podcaster, and journalist in Los Angeles. Her debut young adult novel, Tell Me Everything, is out now. She hosts the First Draft podcast, where she talks shop with other storytellers. And she went to the same college as Amanda Knox.
And now here's our talk with Sarah.
Welcome to SupDoc. I like to do NPR style.
Yeah. And we are in your home, Sarah.
Yeah.
Ennie?
Sarah Ennie.
That's what I thought.
You got it.
Sarah Ennie. You know, it's when we first started doing SupDoc, I wanted it to be, I thought it'd be funny if we looked and sounded like an NPR podcast. And then people would listen and be like, ha, you guys are trying, like, I get it. But then everyone was like, you guys sound a lot like an NPR pod. Like, they didn't
know. Yeah, we legit got that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Not as a complaint, just as
no.
a note.
Yeah, as a note. That's They're like, you so sound funny. Like an NPR podcast. It's so cool. I'm like, yeah, that's the joke. So
yeah, it's no. Oh, no, you're not getting
We're
it.
We're kind of making fun of those, but join our Patreon.
Yes, I love it.
Everyone loves Patreon. And you host a podcast, which is why you graciously set up all your mics for
Absolutely,
us.
Absolutely, yeah. I host the First Draft podcast, First Draft with Sarah Ennie, where I talk to other storytellers and writers. So, and the book I'm writing right now is about a girl who wants to be a documentarian, so I've been like really deep in this world for a few months.
Fiction?
Okay.
It's a fiction novel about a teen girl who wants to learn how to write make documentaries, and so I've been getting into also like, if you were a kid right now, what kind of camera would you go get? Or would you just use your iPhone or what? So it's been kind of interesting.
Did you watch, what is the parody one with the dicks? Is it called Americans?
Yes.
American Vandal.
American Vandal.
Yeah. Of course. Amazing. I did. I'm obsessed with that show.
Last
the first
year,
season is perfect.
At Sketchfest in San Francisco, the comedy festival, I met lots of famous people, but the most, for me, the most exciting is I got to meet three of the guys from American Vandals.
The actors?
The actors, yeah.
They were
pitch
so
perfect.
Good.
Yeah.
They were so
the
good.
The casting is pitch perfect for
like
that.
It was like shocking how great they were. And how like, smart the show was. I was like, this doesn't have any, that one guy was just a legit YouTube guy.
Oh, the main guy?
Yes, the guy who did it, who drew the dicks, or the blonde guy. And I was That's like, good. You're really great.
He's pitch perfect for that casting. He's like, he looks like the classic 80s antagonist.
Yes.
Dickhead.
Totally.
And then they got to use all those videos of him actually being a star on YouTube doing dumb shit.
I didn't know that's where that came from.
Oh, I didn't either.
The footage in America, now it's an excuse to rewatch it. All the footage of him doing dumb shit is videos that he put up on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
It's like layers on layers on layers.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love that.
I got to meet, like, I forget his name, but, oh, he's in a sketch group with...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ryan?
Yeah, Ryan.
Yeah, Flanagan?
Got, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He was
he's
the
a teacher.
The history teacher.
Oh, yeah.
He just, like, talks about how hot the girl is.
Yeah.
That was so funny.
Dead Kevin. He's in Dead Kevin.
Yeah, yeah, Dead Kevin. Yeah, I followed him on Instagram. His stuff is so funny. It's not like... I mean, his character obviously is different, but like then he plays on.
Right. And you've met Ahmed Barucha.
Yeah, we did. We were at his house doing the sub doc.
I love that. I know. I feel like we don't talk enough about how having a podcast is just an excuse to like hang out with people.
Basically. Yeah. And then, you wrote another, your first YA novel just came out,
it
right?
Did. Yeah. It's called Tell Me Everything. And that one is another young girl artist, but she's kind of an Instagram like app takes over her high school. And she is an artist, but is scared to show her work. So it's like, the pitch is if Amelie had Instagram. Oh. She tries to find out who's posting stuff on this app and do nice things for them, but like crosses a whole bunch of boundaries. And
I've never seen that movie, and that movie has come up like every day since I've been down.
Amelie?
That's so interesting.
It's sad. It's a very sad story about that movie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you're not going to watch it?
No.
Okay.
Well, but Amanda Knox, it factors in quite a lot as well.
Yeah.
That's right. And
that's
she,
what
like,
they're watching. I know.
I know. That's right. It keeps coming up since I've been. Like this last week, that movie's come up like five or six times.
So funny.
I know. Isn't that weird?
It seems like Amanda Knox would have had a ukulele YouTube video.
You guys, we can get into it. She is a nerd. I almost spit out my water.
Was
born in Seattle. All my family's up there. I went to college up in Seattle, and I can tell you, I know this girl. Like, I have hung out with this girl. She is a freaking nerd.
Right.
And it makes
literally,
me,
or you mean this type?
Well, we
this
just
archetype.
Found out. You just sent me an article this morning about how she's engaged, and her engagement was alien themed, like UFO alien themed.
Oh,
so
we can
rest assured that she is a nerd, but also just the way the videos that they showed of her in the documentary early on, like the way she was talking about stuff, I was like, this is just a sweet little nerd girl.
It is, yeah. Her dad probably works for either like Costco or Microsoft.
For sure.
Yeah.
Definitely.
In Fremont.
Her dad is Howard Schultz.
Oh my God. Don't even get me started.
Well, apparently they are well off. Like when, like, they, you know, there's a lot of people alleging that she got off because she's super rich. But if you see their home that they show in the documentary, it's very modest, like, you know, middle American kind of upper middle.
Well, and they didn't build that second story because they were so busy going back and forth to freaking Italy and paying for 7 years of legal bills.
Right, right. So you grew up in Seattle and you've met a lot of Amanda Knoxes. So
I moved away when I was young, but I came back for college and I went back every summer. All my family's up there. When I went to college, it was around the same time as Amanda. I mean, I think I might be a year or two older than her, but it was around the same time. And I knew friends who knew the family, and the whole time my friend Lindsay was just like, she did not do it. You know, it was like not something you could even talk about around her because she was so upset by it. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of like was vaguely like witnessing this happen. It was, and then all the stuff they showed about her study abroad, it was all that UW stuff. I went to the University of Washington, which is where she went. And like when they showed her street, I was like, I've been on that street. I know the, you know, like it's just it happened to a girl who grew up just like I did, or my family did. That's why I suggested this doc, because it was like this story kind of hit close to home and was wild.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. It was such a sensation.
Yes.
Like you could not have missed this news story if you're around in that time period.
And I feel bad after watching the doc, like, I know that I was aware of the story and was following it. I think I avoided getting too into the weeds because it was so like sad, and I kind of couldn't tell by the tone of the coverage, like, what was I supposed to feel? It was so gross.
Yeah.
Like the way they were talking about her was disgusting. So I think I avoided getting into the weeds on it. And this was one of the stories where when people got really into the conspiracy theories, I was not into it. It's one of the, I love a good conspiracy theory, but this one was like, about like weird sex behavior and people's judgments about that, or like feelings about her appearance, and it was just, there were so many layers of ick to it.
Yeah, it's very icky. I remember not paying that much attention until that verdict came down, and then
the first time,
I guess it must have been 2009, and then just like not really paying enough attention to backtrack and try to check everything out. Mm-hmm. So when this came out, I didn't really like the marketing campaign for this.
I don't remember the marketing campaign.
This came out in 2017, and it was a big poster with her face on it. And just like, it was almost like the Social Network poster, just like a bunch of words like
funny,
liar, sheep. Sheeple, I don't know, like just a bunch of like stabber or angel, you know, like all these like stupid. I'm like, this is stupid. Like the very first sentence of this movie, I still don't really like. Even though it's her, you know, saying, "I'm either you or a total nut job," you know, like that's her.
Yeah,
it's a weird opening line.
Yeah, she's like, "I'm either
the most devious person in cheap clothing, or I'm...
Or I'm you, or this could happen to anyone.
I feel like there's a lot of in-between. There's a lot of in-between those two things.
And now that you said that, like, at the moment, I was like, oh, okay, okay. Like, it was, that was the first line. It was, like, a strong, interesting opening, and she's looking right to camera. But now that you're saying it, I'm like, oh, I wonder if that was a producer thing.
Yeah, or, for sure.
I just would... It's hard. You don't really get a sense of it watching the documentary. I think it does a great job of going through what happened. But I was like, how is she even processing this? Like, yeah. I her talking about it was... I was like, how do you even get outside of yourself to comprehend what just happened to you and your family? I don't know. Mm-hmm. She did a good... It seemed like she had a good grasp on it. Mm-hmm. But...
I mean, she's had a decade or, you know, to process and think and go through all the...
So weird.
She put out a memoir in 2013.
Oh, she did.
And then I think that's then this, but the film is obviously interesting because it is her.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure she gets like production credit or something like that. Or like, yeah, it's definitely the hook of it was you're hearing her side of it.
Well, we heard from everybody. They did a good job of getting, or at least, you know, they portrayed it this way, but the, what seemed to be like the main players, I was happy that we got to talk to a journalist and the lead of the lead investigator, and then the Italian. I want to talk forever about the Italian forensics people in Rome. Oh, yeah. They were so mad.
Yeah, well, a little sloppy job done by the investigative unit of Perugia.
Perugia,
Which just seems like a pretty small town vibe.
Yeah.
This was like a big murder in a small town. Like, and this could have been any country too. Like.
Mm-hmm. Have you been to Italy before, Paco?
No.
Or have you been to Italy?
I have been.
Yeah.
And I've been in a town that was not unlike that. I went for a writing retreat that was like pretty remote. So that was another thing where I was like, oh shit. If something had happened to me in that town, I have no idea how it would have been handled.
I mean, some of the information that came out was just completely made up. Made headlines all over the world.
The trial of the decade.
It was just crazy.
The whole world knew who I had ever had sex with.
She was terrified.
Amanda!
I felt like a child again. And I knew. I was a kid.
They also want to be, well, we can talk about this. When I had to write down his name, Giuliano Magnini?
Magnini, it's probably Magnini. Yeah, like that guy, the inspector.
The more he talked, the more I was reminded of this one time I was in Italy on a train. And I was pretty young, studying abroad. And this old Italian guy just had no hesitancy to critique how I was sitting. And it was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Why would you? And just the like the very, in my experience, the attitude there of Italian men just being like very free with yelling at me, speaking really loudly in my face. And it was just like a very uncomfortable experience because America is one thing, but it's not that, like, or it's not that everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so when he started talking, I was like, oh, right. And then he got into the Catholic stuff. I was like, this is messed up.
Oh, the lead prosecutor guy.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, how does grief? No, we can go in any order, how does grief look? Like he, you know, part of the judge, the complete judgmental prosecutorial evidence was like based on looks and her eyes. And,
his whole thing was like, and I mean, it was really shocking. I enjoyed the documentary. I thought it was good. And because I also am the kind that when I want it to be contextualized. So they did a good job of being like, let's walk through it. Mm-hmm. And just the shots of them breaking windows, walking into the crime scene with just like their shaggy clothes on and like having no respect for what was going on. And then him being like, right away, he says, like, she was acting so weird outside of the house. And they zoom in on, like, the boyfriend just and girlfriend, kissing. Like, hugging each other, kissing, and, like, being in shock.
Yeah.
I was like, how is that wrong?
Yeah.
Well, it happens. I feel like it happens way too often where people judge people on their looks. I mean, even I think it, not Barbara Walters, but Diane Sawyer is interviewing her. And she's like, well, you don't seem upset.
Yeah.
It's like, well, fuck you. Yeah. This is my process. Like, yeah. How horrible would it be to be in a situation where you're not only accused of doing something this horrible and you know you're innocent, but then people are judging you on how you look.
Yeah.
Then sad you are.
You're being asked to perform whatever they expect to see from you. And that's like another layer of trauma. It's like, well, I'm not going to be my saddest self in front of you, Diane Sawyer. Like, this is a constructed environment.
If it was me, I would, because I'm such a fucking people pleaser that I would next time get interviewed, probably cry too much. And they're like, that's fake. Those are crocodile tears.
I know. When is it too much?
Yeah, it would be one of those just like, boom, boom, boom. Romaine, and then it'd be black and white and red, and I'd be blubbering, and they're just like, we don't believe a word of this guy. I'm Chris Hansen. Like, this guy, no way. Now he cries too much.
It turns on this whole other thing. Yeah. It's like, wait a second.
I would dig so many holes. I would fuck up so many times. Because I'm horrible at trolling, too. Mm. Even on Facebook, where I'm like, ha-ha, take this. And people are like, blah. I'm like, delete.
Blah, blah. Oh, they take your shit seriously, right? Yeah.
I can't do it. It always backfires.
Oh, my God.
I really have to make sure I never break any laws. That's where
I think that's where, I think, yeah, I think that's a good call.
But I try.
No, you're like, I go right up to the line, and then I
look over it, and it looks bad. It looks bad for me. Some people are super good at it, though.
Some people are great at crime. Well, listen, we're seeing a lot of documentaries about people that are great and very nonchalant about crime.
Mm-hmm. What is the... Oh, my God.
You just have to lose your... Just become a sociopath?
Right. Is that it?
Are you talking about Elizabeth Holmes?
I'm definitely talking about Elizabeth Holmes.
How do people
She didn't
not
stab know? Anyone, though, Here's, at least. Well, no, well, she did. It was all stabbing. It was a bunch of miniature stabbing.
She was literally stabbing millions of people and then telling them wrong information based on it. Wait, speaking of wrong medical information... The one fact in this documentary that I almost fell off my couch is that they told her she had HIV.
Oh, my God. I know.
The Italian police told Amanda Knox while she was detained that she had HIV as part of mind games to get her to do what? She was already in prison.
I don't know.
Yeah. They kind of glossed over that, and I was like, what
it the? It was brief.
Yeah.
And it was over, footage of, like, blood, mm-hmm. like, plasma or something. Uh-oh. And they're like, they said she had AIDS. I was like, what?
And that was kind of the way that we got into the fact that she had been writing a diary and that was leaked.
Oh, man, yeah.
And then it cuts to this British motherfucker who we need to talk about at length.
Nick Pisa. Yeah.
Who was
Nick Piece of Shit.
Nick Piece of Shit.
I've had 3 years to develop that joke.
He was shocking to me. Yeah. Watching this documentary, I was like, I cannot believe that these words are coming out of his mouth. How does he not know that they're going to, use that and he's not going to look good saying this. But I mean, I don't think he knows what good looks like. I think he feels like he did a great job.
Yeah.
I mean, when he's talking about journalistic integrity, it's like, are you fucking kidding me?
I can't.
He's like, it's our job to, what he's saying is not our job to look into facts. Mm-hmm. It's our job to make sure that we move quickly and we're not scooped by competitors. Yeah. Which is like this, there is actually something about investigative journalist integrity that some people have that obviously this guy doesn't.
There's an article that when this came out that's like, the real villain of the Amanda Knox documentary is Nick Pisa. Right.
Absolutely. Well, that's the exact line that stood out to me too when he was like, what am I supposed to do? Go get secondary confirmation about what happened? Which I don't even know how I would do that.
You're right.
Or get scooped. And I was like, whoa.
Right.
And then after he had the audacity to talk about Woodward and Bernstein in relation to his job or whatever the fuck he thinks he's doing. And I was like, by the way, watch every freaking documentary about that process and you'll see that Deep Throat is their second source. Like their whole reason that we hold them up as journalistic integrity is that they were forced to get three or four sources for this impossible thing. That's the whole bit.
Right. Yeah.
That's the gig.
Isn't that what they always say? Like, they never rely on one. They always have to have
You backup. Have to have at least two, and now it's moving on to three or four.
Yeah.
I went to journalism school. That's what I did at the University of Washington. So that was also particularly I was stunned by what he was saying.
Oh, yeah. It's so fucking egregious. And then, how happy he was that he was getting so many front page.
Oh, my God. He compared being published on the front page that many times to having an orgasm.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I'm sure it is for you, but why the fuck are you saying that out loud? This is insane.
Yeah. I don't know why. I'm sure the producers were just like, yes.
You know, the only time we heard a producer's voice was...
Oh, that's true.
When they were like, but why did you print the diary? Or like, how did you get the diary? Or why was her diary worth being aired publicly? Yeah. And that was the only time we heard a producer voice.
That's right.
And is this like when we learned about how TMZ pays people yesterday? Did you know about this? Mm-mm. Is that, I mean, it was on, it, we, in sequence, this will make sense. But yeah, TMZ just pays like EMTs and law clerks and all sorts of people to develop sources and get scoops on things.
Wow.
They just give people $50 or whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, for anything or
for, you know, like
to prime you,
like, I guess if it's like an EMT, it's like, hey, I had to take this person in and they were like unconscious when I found them, blah, 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 stuff like that.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And airport baggage handlers.
Oh yeah. They really, okay, but
to
they're
be honest,
smart.
I
they
admire that.
They cultivated, that's the thing our friend was saying. He works for Associated Press.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, they cultivated these, you know, kind of questionable, but it's he's like, honestly, they're accurate a lot of the time. Mostly they're accurate. So,
well, that's true. Yeah. They're actually first person accounts. I will say that I don't know whether or not EMTs have to take the Hippocratic Oath. I don't know what ethical bounds EMTs actually
have.
Do
you know how easy it is to become an EMT?
Yeah, it's shockingly
easy.
Yeah.
My stepsister.
David Lee Roth did it.
Yeah, my stepsister is an EMT.
Your stepsister, and if she can David Lee Roth.
David Lee Roth is my stepsister, which is, it's a whole nother thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I grew up in a Van Halen family, so. Yeah.
Oh, I grew up in an Aerosmith family. I'm sorry.
Oh, I wish I
thought you grew up in a Hart family.
Oh,
being
you
from
know what?
Washington.
I did. Yeah, okay. I did. You're right.
Fair enough.
I worked at a candy store in Seattle all through college, and the members of Hart would come in, and I was like so in love with them.
Oh, really? Was it C's?
It was not C's. It was this local, it was called the Confectionery. Shout out to the Confectionery at the University Village. And then also members of the Mariners would come in. We were just like,
oh, that's cool.
The local, like, really place where you could go get really fancy stuff for your kid's birthday or whatever.
Oh.
Now, circling back, you said you were friends with people that were family friends with her?
Yes.
With the Knox family?
Yes. So we didn't get into it because I was, like, not informed enough. And, like, it was so sensitive, especially, like, when I was at school, it was, like, first happening. She was just in prison and they didn't know it was going to go down. But so it always felt like, I was like, oh, this is happening to people that I know, which was really wild.
It kind of reminds me, it's not the same, but, I knew Sarah Shord and the hikers that were, that were arrested in Iran.
Really?
Yeah, they were. So, and I knew her as being just someone from Berkeley who was like in like the deep, like East Bay activist, like kind of anarchist scene. So when it became a point of like, we don't really want to talk about what she's into because Hillary Clinton has to go talk to Iran and try to get her out.
Oh,
we're just like, oh yeah, let's not, like, we'll just be like, you know, support her on social media without being like, here's something she said about going to hang out with the Zapatistas, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so like, but, and like, since she, it's kind of weirdly, it's not similar, but I know Amanda Knox now does like journalism and stuff. She like writes opinion pieces and stuff. Sarah, I think, wrote a book about her experience, and then, like, you know, and one of the other guys who is in prison also with her, like, does a lot of investigative journalism stuff, and
She also works for people who were wrongfully detained, right?
Or Amanda Knox works on the Innocence Project. Yeah, that's right. Which also worked on Stephen Avery.
Yeah.
I think we just got to the level. I think we were just talking before we started rolling about how this whole generation of like documentaries, like, actually interleaves. It's like the Marvel universe.
It's becoming the MCU. The documentary
DCU.
You guys just nerded out there for a second.
Yeah.
I know, because I was thinking the same thing. I'm going to pull up my notes that I had about this too.
Because it's reality, man.
Yeah. Well, they also worked on the West Memphis 3.
What's on
The Innocence Project. Mm-hmm. You know, which is another, oh man, that's so nightmarish.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like she spent 4 years in prison, Amanda Knox?
At least,
waiting a trial.
I mean, the food. Come on.
Well, and then the other thing, the other thing I remember reading about, and then we saw in the documentary, was that she was not fluent in Italian before going to prison, and then she's like, okay, so now
I gotta learn this shit.
She is like fully fluent in Italian and was able to communicate with her defense attorneys because she learned it or whatever. But I was like, what a horrible, like, you'll never not know Italian.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you want to just never go back or hear anything
about it? I don't think she was will ever go back. And it's like, what a specific language to learn, because like there's not that many what other countries,
if you don't want to go back
what
to
colonies
Italy,
are what left are you gonna, after the Roman Empire fell? Like what other places speak Italian?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
no.
Yeah.
I know that is nuts. To be held in prison before you await your trial for something you know you didn't do. And yeah. Mm-hmm. Have the entire world think you did it. And with these sensational headlines of like murder orgy, she laughed when she got stabbed. And
I wonder what, I couldn't tell because there was that, they did have that audio for some reason, the audio of like the mother-daughter reunion moment, which I don't know why that was like recorded. But anyway, regardless,
what was that?
When her mom, when Amanda Knox's mom first came to see her in the prison, Italy. When the family first got to Italy,
they recorded
and she had
that?
Just been arrested, and there was audio of them like tearfully embracing. Uh-huh. And I was like, I don't know why this is audio recorded, but it was a good moment in the documentary. But it was then the first moment of her mom being like, this is a really big deal, actually. Like the family's getting harassed and the press is coming after us. Yeah. And Amanda was like, what? Mm-hmm. Just like you, like that's the thing to me about the scope and the processing for her is like, you're in prison. You don't see like how much access did she have to any kind of information or outside? Mm-hmm. And then you are taken from your cell and it's like the press swarm and mm-hmm. the Italians like rushing the square and screaming at you.
Oh,
it's just like how,
God.
I mean, mentally, how do you get over that?
I don't know. How do you, man, I beat myself up when I buy like a t-shirt I don't need. You know, like, yeah. I don't know how you can come out of that tailspin where you feel like, man, I must be the biggest fuck up in the world.
And you're like 23.
And
at
you're
the
23.
Time.
Yeah. And you like basically threw a dart at the map and went there for like a summer.
It seemed like she knew German, right? She could read Harry Potter
she
in
was
German.
Reading a German
before
issue
that.
Of Harry Potter. That was an interesting detail.
Oh. Yeah. So she maybe had the facility for languages, even though they portray her as just being kind of like a space cadet. For the first part of it, I'm like, she could speak German and she was learning Italian. So, I mean, she wasn't a total.
Right.
And it wasn't a cakewalk to get into UW when she got in. So, you know, she's.
And she was like smart. On a dean's list or something.
Yeah,
right?
I think she's a nerd, guys. She's smart. But she was just kind of like a. That's what I mean when I say nerd, I guess. It's like socially, she was just like a little maybe immature.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys, can we talk about her Italian boyfriend? Speaking of oh my God.
I didn't realize she liked him because he reminded her of Harry Potter.
Oh,
did you see that?
How did you? No.
That was in one of the other, I started watching a BBC documentary that was on YouTube.
He did have those glasses.
He had the glasses and there was pictures of him with like the turtleneck or whatever.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
He kind of has that
it's
vibe.
It's crazy to think they were together for 5 days.
5 days.
That
is
so crazy.
I've had relationships that were like 4 years that weren't as traumatic.
Right.
About that 5 day.
Or like the, you guys, I was obsessed with him though because I was glad that we got to hear from him.
Yeah.
We didn't as much, even though he's,
Raphael, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't hear as much from Raphael as from Amanda. And this was about her, so that makes sense. But it was sort of like, he didn't leave and go back home. Like he stayed in the country that did this to him. Like that is another particular kind of really messed up.
Yeah.
But then also like, at what stage was it where he was like kind of trying to reconnect with her? Was like, I still have feelings for you. I was like, oh my God, sweet baby.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
No.
What are we talking
about? Leave her alone. Burn everything.
Move on.
This is a move on thing that needs to happen.
Yeah.
Rafi, man. Yeah.
It was
time to move on. Those Italian boys, they're so sensitive.
They're
so sensitive.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say he got caught up in the web of the prosecutor and the cops who were yes, we scored something big.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, I felt like I got the sense from them because that main prosecutor,
Giuliano.
Giuliano Magnini. It seemed like they were so gotcha. Like they were so ready to just bring this American girl.
How many times he said as if? I actually wrote it down, as if in quotes, great police work. Because it's like as if she didn't know what she was talking about. Mm-hmm. As if she committed the crime. As if it was like you can't do that is not police
it's
work.
Not how it works.
He also said at one point, pleasure at any cost is at the heart of all crime. I'm like, no, it's not. What the fuck are you talking about?
Really he really got himself so worked up about this that he thought it made sense.
Yeah.
That these two men would be so interested in pleasing Amanda Knox, like, sexually, that they would have murdered her roommate to then have sex on or near her body.
On or around her body.
It was so, and by that point, that's especially insane. In the documentary where they'd established everything, it was like, this is so outrageous. Mm-hmm. I can't even follow this.
Well, his first clue was like the body was covered with a comforter. Right. And only a female murderer would do that.
Only a woman would even think of that.
A man would just want to revel in his handiwork or something like that.
I would have found
an Afghan, personally, not a comforter.
Like, I would have gone with something a little more stylish.
A little more, well, not like, maybe less, according to the Afghans I grew up on. I'm just thinking more itchy.
The Afghans in a Van Halen house. Yeah.
I mean, this is like making a murder in the sense of like, this is probably a small town where like nothing like this has ever happened.
That's exactly right. It's a medieval.
They're like basing it on movie. He even says like, I fancy myself a detective like a Sherlock Holmes in a movie. I'm like, you did not have a Watson with you, I guess.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, how Sherlock picks up on things from tiny details. And I'm like, well, what you're talking about is like hints and personal bias, like, sure. Mm-hmm. So it would only be a woman that would cover it up. It's like, well, what the fuck
Sherlock
does that
Holmes
come
was
from?
A private citizen that would help Scotland Yard. Vigilante, you're the head of Scotland Yard.
Yeah,
it's like you can't do the as if stuff. That's what I meant, like, with the how does grief look, and like also like what is appropriate? What's the appropriate response? Yeah. You can't gauge that.
No,
I hate when people do that to people they think may be guilty. Yeah. It's like their response is not appropriate enough. It's like, well, who gets to say that?
Right.
I mean, the thing that there are a lot of things that don't add up in this case, which I think is like why there were so many questions. Like, what they're like the brick, the stone to break the window looked like it was, you know, an inside job, so to speak. And I'm just also like why? How? Maybe I missed something. If her door was locked, was there another window out? How was her door locked?
The window, I thought, was in her room.
Oh, that was a window that was broken out?
So I think the deal was this guy who was convicted of killing Meredith.
Rudy? No,
do I have that right?
Oh, yeah.
Rudy, yeah.
Yeah, Rudy, who was, like, it kept being shocking to me where I was like, we're still, like, someone was convicted of this.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. He confessed as well.
Yeah.
And said that she didn't do it.
And said that she didn't do it. And it was kind of like just everyone marched merrily along. And it's like, wait, but what?
But we also have to remember, she also said that she was there.
Right.
And that her boss at the bar did it.
Right, after she was physically assaulted by the police in the middle of the night.
It sounds like
that.
What?
She was talking about how in the interrogation room, which she was interrogated for many hours, they were hitting her in the back of the head.
Yeah. And I think the interpretation seems to be, or what she's throwing out is like, there was a language miscommunication. She was just pointing her phone, and like Patrick, the bar owner, texted me, and they're just like, the way you wrote this said you were going to meet later that night, but it was probably just like a bad
Italian.
She was
like, see you later.
She was just like, see you later, like, you know, and just like in her non-proper Italian.
Right.
And then also, then she just said his name, and they interpreted it as like, oh, he was there too? I'm like, no, this is who the text is from. But it does suck because it is like a white woman throwing a black man under the bus, even in another country, that's like still the case. And he basically had to leave the country because he was like for like 3 weeks or something, the main suspect. His life is pretty much ruined based on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of lives ruined in this.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
And that's,
I feel bad for her family too, like Meredith's family. It's
I know.
Like so sad. They just, because like they, you know, they just wanted it to be done and it kept like getting peeled open.
Well, here's my, how did you guys feel about how her Meredith and her family were treated in this documentary?
Well, I don't think they were treated at all. I don't think that was almost no treatment given.
That's why I watched this BBC one. There's a little bit more of their stuff in there. And like, I guess she was like in like a music video and like she was in Leeds, like in the same time, like about the same age. I'm like, I actually knew a bunch of people from Leeds College around the same time. I was like, I wonder if anyone like knew her, you know? So it was like, you knew these people that knew her on this side. And I was thinking like, maybe I knew people that went to school with Meredith, you know, I don't
probably
know.
Did.
Yeah.
But it's like they do that a lot, I feel like, in documentaries where they just the victim, the corpse, unfortunately, doesn't get a lot of love. Yep. Like in The Making a Murder, like Teresa Halbach, like she
almost no mention.
Completely basically we don't know much about her.
Yeah, the movie's called Amanda Knox. It's not called Meredith.
Right.
What
happened
to Meredith?
Right, right,
Which, is also the least creative title for a documentary.
That's true.
You know, it's like
they really didn't. Yeah,
I mean, even Foxy Nazi would be, you
something,
know,
something like it was a working title that just got all the way through.
Yeah, they got done with it. Like, fuck it, let's just call it Amanda Knox.
Yeah,
because that's what people.
Yeah, because the memoir is called like Waiting to Be Heard.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know what that. I guess that's
not,
just,
that's not great either.
Yeah, it's not great either. Honestly,
maybe say calling it Amanda Knox is like a blowback to the fact that her name was. That over time we talked about her so much as Foxy Knox or all these other like insane.
I forgot that
crime names that they came up with.
Yeah,
I forgot that Foxy Noxy was her MySpace name, and that's why.
I know.
There's and like this reminds me, this is the MySpace era, like 2007, 2009. That was like peak MySpace.
And what if something happened in your life that you then became known as whatever you named your MySpace page or whatever your away message
your
on
photos,
AIM was
yeah.
or whatever? I mean, what a nightmare.
Yeah, the photos of her with the machine gun, and there's a photo of like. Raphael with like a knife and like a mummy outfit or something. I'm just like
Halloween.
If you dug through my 2007 era MySpace, there's a lot of real emo LiveJournal type posts on there.
It's not great. But then also the overt glee that the main prosecutor had at discovering those photos. And Nick Pisa at discovering those photos.
Yeah.
He was like, well, you couldn't dream up something better. And I was like, you are a fuckwad. Get a picture of her like it like do your job.
Yeah.
He was just, I mean, he worked for the Daily Mail, so I guess that they.
I guess
have
he
a type.
Was doing his job.
But that was so, like, just from the beginning that he was so.
He's a piece of shit.
He was such a piece of shit.
I thought that the UK, like, journalism or libel laws were, like, more strict than American
that's
libel.
In the UK.
They are. They're, like, tabloids are far, 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 far worse.
Right.
Than ours.
Yeah.
And I think they're libel.
They just don't fuck with the royal family because they need the source. That's the only thing. That's the only kind of like hands off is the royal family.
Which was interesting this week, hearing about. I was just listening to Keep It, which is how I came up with a lot of
that. Oh, yeah.
Stuff,
I know that show. Yeah.
Them talking about Ira and Kara and Lewis talking about how American Twitter is sort of what leaked, whatever, was the news source talking about William's supposed affair. With Kate's best friend, I guess, but the press over in the UK is like
they won't
not
touch it.
Talking about
didn't
it.
Didn't hear it, love. Well, I didn't know about
they want
that.
To have access to that that sweet, sweet royal baby picture.
Yeah, they can just the royal family can just cut off journalists whenever they don't want to deal with them.
Mm.
I guess that's starting to happen in America too.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
yeah, we got we have our own version of the. Fucked up monarchy here.
I mean, this also reminded me, and like, don't talk to a camera crew if you don't need to.
Amen.
Like, you don't have any reason to talk, even if you're just like gonna be so, like, I'm a friend or like, I'm whatever. Like, just like, don't talk to them if you don't.
Yeah.
Like, there's no compelling reason for you to do it.
None. And they want you to go off the handle. Yeah. They're hoping that you just like, you know.
I mean, if you took the extreme, I guess you could also say, a lot of people would say, probably don't ever talk to a journalist, but.
Listen,
we got shit to promote.
Yeah.
Yeah, I worked as a journalist for a long time, and the people who would say yes to talking to me, I was shocked frequently.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, there's no compelling reason for a lot of people to talk, but they want to talk.
Yeah.
People want to talk, and they want to talk about themselves and their life.
Well,
and that's...
I feel like people are afraid if they don't, they'll be thought they're guilty. And if they do, they can tell their story, and maybe in the same, like, maybe outsmart. It's the same thing with cops. They always say, don't talk to the cops. And then there's people who do, because they're like, I want them to know I'm not guilty. And then the cops are like, you said this, and now you're guilty.
Last time I talked to a cop was, like, it was in the middle of a car thing. Like, it was definitely this other guy's fault. Like, a drunk dude, like, rear-ended, or hit me, and then forced me into the car in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I'll just talk to this cop
because,
like, you know, like, this is only going to work out for me. I think in the end, this guy was so drunk when he hit me.
But it's a good reminder. Like, this documentary I thought was a good reminder. Like, journalists are people, and they're also just as likely to be pieces of shit as anybody else. You have to hope that the journalistic structure is like self-checking in some way, shape, or form, mm-hmm. and it's not always. And if you are a journalist that gets to the point where you're writing for the New York Times, you are so fucking full of your own shit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, those people are proud to be at the New York Times, and they should be, but that comes with a lot of hubris.
I stir my coffee with my Pulitzer.
Yeah, I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Michael Marlborough, but right. you can hear his voice. He's very proud to be the
Pulitzer. Yeah. Thank God for appeals processes. That's what every time I watch a true crime doc.
That's a good point.
I'm like, I love the fact that there is an appeals process yeah. mm-hmm. in the Western democracies.
Agreed.
You know, yeah. like if that was the final say and you had no appeal process, fuck.
Yeah. So true.
There'd be a prison on every block instead of a Starbucks, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, if there was no appeals processing, because.
Also, did you guys totally understand how it came to be that she was tried again? I didn't really understand that.
No.
Because it took like maybe 4 years for the first trial right. to go all the way through, and yeah. then she was found guilty. Then the appeals process went through, and she was still in prison during the appeals process.
Right.
Then she was acquitted, and she got to get the fuck out of Italy and go mm-hmm. back to Seattle, and then she was tried again.
Mm-hmm. I think it was something like the prosecution got to appeal the appeal. I think that's what it was.
Okay.
And then it went to a different city. It went to Florence.
And it was like all yeah. the way up to the Italian Supreme Court right. or something, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Supreme Court that was the final where they were yeah. just that they were like, they had nothing to do with it.
And then can we talk about my favorite people? The Roman forensic. I was so obsessed with how it was such a funny thing to be like, oh yeah, that's right. Like Italy also has like high professional legit people. Like we just spent so much time with these like Italian, like rural,
right.
Big fish, small pond type of people. And then cut to these Roman, people based in Rome who were redoing the forensics of the scene. And they were like, this is monstrous.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were so pissed.
They were like, we found like, there's like DNA that had been contaminated, and they were not wearing.
They weren't changing their gloves properly. They were wearing their street clothes into the crime scene all over the place. They were like, everything is contaminated. We can't trust any mm-hmm. of them.
Yeah.
All the knives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The entire prosecution hinged on the fact that they in Raphael's house, they found a knife that had Amanda Knox's DNA on the handle, which was reliable. But then on the blade, there was some of Meredith's mm-hmm. DNA, but a tiny, tiny bit. That was what the whole prosecution hinged on. And then the forensic person was like, well, when I went and asked how they processed that in their lab, they said they were processing all the DNA and all the knives they found from every single house involved at the same time in the same facility.
And this goes back to Theranos.
And you can't trust. Yeah.
I threw it in the box. It said it was fine, but all the blood got everywhere.
We put it in a USPS box. Oh, my God.
Have you ever been accused of something that you've never, you were not?
What if I was like,
you what guys, if you've been accused of something you did?
Here's the time to come clean.
She deletes the file.
Bye.
I haven't gotten in too much trouble or had to really talk. I've like had been rear-ended or whatever. Yeah. Well, to be honest, I've also rear-ended someone. Mm-hmm. but have had very minimal interaction with any kind of law enforcement.
Did you do a year abroad?
I did. I did only a few months in Paris.
Paris.
But I traveled by myself for about 3 weeks in Europe a few years ago. And watching this documentary reminded me about, I was like, man, I was just getting on that Ryanair flight by myself. Like, if something happened, it would have been really bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do they have, like, public defenders in Europe? I don't even know. Do they have people that they're just like, here's a public defender? Like,
we
have
in the United States. Yeah. Listen, if they have socialized medicine, they've got to have some. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Actually, like, interestingly, like, the difference between a country and the EU is, like, the EU just told Italy that they owe Amanda Knox money for falsely imprisoning her.
Wow.
See, Italy, and like, remember, guys, we are not that far removed from an Italy that's like almost tanking the entire EU economy.
Oh, yeah.
Because Italy can't get its shit together.
No. Yeah.
Like, watching this video was like, whatever. Italy is wonderful. Everyone should go visit it. But I was like, they're also like still relying on stuff they did back in the day. They're like an old uncle who's like, I was one of the original members of some band. And it's like, well, you're not cool anymore and you need to get a job.
Wait, I'm not. Okay. But yeah, no, actually, I was also reminded in the film that in the documentary, there's a, I'm like, oh, wait, oh, you can't get away from Donald Trump anytime.
Oh, ever.
If he just shows ever. Up, it's like, right. We should have boycotted tourism to Italy. Because he supported Amanda Knox. I love that Amanda Knox also came out with, like, her own statement. Just like, I know he tried to get me out of a prison in Italy, but I'm not going to vote for him. You know?
Good. Do you remember that? I did not remember that.
Yeah, she did an editorial. I'm like, he had my back, but I don't have this guy's back right
and,
now.
And she's obviously working now for the Innocence Project. Yeah. I'm sure she and nor any of us should ever forget that he took out the New York Times
Central
ad.
Central Park 5. Yeah, exactly.
So disgusting. He's just a villain. At all times. But yeah, that's true. We can't escape it for one moment.
And then they made, I just Googled Donald Trump Italy, and then like there was a float where they had a giant head of Donald Trump as like an emperor, but it was like kind of like a parody, or like it was kind of like a Banksy type.
Oh my God.
Like a parody of Donald Trump with like the Warhammer. It's like a Warhammer video game image or something. Look,
interesting.
This program, if you don't know how we feel about Donald Trump at this point, you know, leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts.
You know what would really get your conservative friends to hate us the most is to donate.
My conservative friends.
No, I'm talking about the listener in case. Yes. It's to donate to our Patreon page.
Yes.
That is how you get back
That's
to us.
That's how you get us cups. Yeah.
That's how you will own us, is to support us through Patreon / SupDoc Podcast.
Yeah. Support Pomplamoose, the band.
Oh my God. Okay. So I took some notes while I was listening. Some of these were so. Oh, and we can't talk about how awful this journalist was without saying there were plenty of interstitial American journalists being total douchebags also. Sure.
Yes.
Was it Shepard Smith, the Fox guy?
Yeah, the Fox guy.
Who was like, the one clip when she, maybe this was when she was during the appeals, I think because the appeal was when it really was this worldwide thing. And he was like, I know they don't have like hair and makeup in prison, but
yeah,
she could have looked a little bit better. So I was like,
body
what
shaming
the fuck?
And like fetishizing at the
and
same
also,
time.
She's like a stunningly beautiful 24-year-old woman. I was like, she looks fine, and she's been in prison, you dick. It was so terrible.
It goes back to like, how are you supposed to look and sound appropriate? Like,
if she showed up with a red lip, would she seem more innocent?
Right.
Like, what kind of game do you want her to play?
They tear her down for that. You're literally fucked.
Yeah.
Yes.
The best thing you can do is stay silent and just keep your head up.
Absolutely.
Then write your memoir later.
Because they also say, at the defense table, like people say, they didn't say anything.
Right.
They didn't look sad. They looked down. They smiled.
And we hear this now still all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Who was it recently that was like...
smiling?
I think, and this is like, listen, this every single subject here is dark, but the...
Casey Anthony?
The gymnast. The doctor who was accused of molesting
Larry Nassar,
hundreds of...
Yeah.
That he... Remember there was like, he was so... According to people who were in the courtroom, he was so sort of like placid the whole time.
Yeah.
And then towards the end, when it started to actually sink in that he was going to prison for this, that he then started to like emote in any way. And it was like, too late, buddy.
Yeah.
You are pure evil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a doc. Obviously, they're making a doc about that, too. That's going to be.
Yeah.
Do it sports month.
Yeah. Yeah. Another true crime sports one, which you don't see a lot. You don't see the true crime sports mix.
Yeah.
The other one I was thinking about that would have been fun is the doping one.
Did
you guys already do that one?
No. We did not. I didn't even see Icarus.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Was it good?
It's good, yeah.
I heard it was... I mean, like, I like the style of it, right? The guy tries to do it himself, which is very interesting.
It has kind of a pop feel to it, you know? It's not, like, the best documentary, but it's pretty good, yeah.
That guy's also, like, kind of the second in charge of, like, commissioning documentaries for Netflix.
Oh,
Jason Springenkoff or whatever. He won the Oscar for Icarus, but it's like him and Lisa Nishimura basically have their co-executive producer on like almost all the Netflix podcast documentaries.
Yeah. I feel like I'm so grateful to Netflix for making documentaries accessible.
Yeah.
It's so super cool.
Mm-hmm.
We don't like that they have a podcast about it, but
they stole our fucking idea. Anyway, they have a podcast about documentaries.
They do. I didn't
see about the ones that they make.
Yeah. I only listen to SubDoc, so I don't know anything about.
And my, I had this idea to pitch this to Netflix, so that after you watched one of the docs, you would hear SubDoc.
It's like the Gay of Thrones.
Like the After the Throne situation.
Yeah, exactly.
It would still be fun to just do that rogue and release it.
So what is what's the theme of this? What's the theme of this doc? Like, what's the overarching theme?
I think that's why they had that bit at the beginning of her being like, either you think I did it and I'm a sociopath, or this could happen to anyone.
Right. And I think, I mean, yeah, I think that is one of the strong themes of this doc.
Is it like a cautionary tale about, like, don't do a year abroad?
Yeah, maybe.
That's what I took away from it.
I mean, like, it didn't make me want to do that.
Well, it happens here in the United States. I mean, there's plenty of docs about people being wrongly accused.
Dude, long shots like one of that, too.
Yeah, yeah. West Memphis 3. I mean, there's so many of them. It can happen anywhere. I think it's like we don't need, well, we need universal health care, but we need universal law care, too, I think, at some point. You know, like, because going under the microscope of the judiciary is extremely expensive. Well, having to hire lawyers and
I kind of was also thinking about this entire trend of true crime.
Yeah.
How it sort of is, it's a little bit complicated, I think, in the American mind is like true crime, because it's not like the solution is more jail necessarily. Right. And then we basically have this entire like school to prison pipeline that is kind of part of these broader things that we're talking about.
Yep.
So it's just like, it's also like complicated. Like when people were talking about like, you know, the USC and project, you know,
oh my God, I can't wait for every documentary
school,
about that.
Oh yeah. School, like, you know, bribing to get into, you know, elite colleges. And then like, it's like, people are like, Lori Loughlin shouldn't have to go to jail. I'm like, well, there is like a woman who just said her kid was in a different school district. How many years?
Five.
Did she get? 5 years of prison. So it's like, yeah, if Lori Loughlin doesn't get time, this person shouldn't get time. The same way, like, people that now there's like, oh, hey, like, you know, weed is quasi-legal. I'm like, what about all the black and brown people that have been in prison for weed?
Yeah, if
this
we're
turned
not,
into a different podcast. I'm sorry, but
That's part of, I do think you're right. I think we're at the beginning of, like, we've now had like maybe 2 or 3 years of like pretty concentrated focus on true crime stuff, like in a very intense way. And I feel like that's the potential next steps for this level of like thinking about the pro. It's like, this isn't Law and Order. At the end of watching documentaries, you don't feel like, well, and the good guys did it again.
Yeah.
It's like you are left feeling much more unsettled.
Right.
And about how much money people are trying to put into the prison system.
Well, a theme that George and I get into a lot when we cover true crime is that you can't count on local law enforcement to solve anything. Like, if you get into a problem, call HBO, not your local
cops. That's real.
Yeah. And even when we're reviewed by, I'm going to drop a name, the AV Club, that was the point that they actually was like saying. It was the point that we made, that they were like, this is very prescient and important, is that you can't count on that, you know?
Did you kill Meredith Kircher?
No.
Were you there that night?
No.
Do you know anything you have not told police?
No.
Italians are calling this the trial of the decade.
We weren't best friends, but I was so shocked by what happened to her.
Their friends were telling us how Amanda had been behaving, performing cartwheels and kissing each other.
This does not look like grief.
I mean, who behaves like that? Of course she did it. She's mad.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Gotta cast this doc. Gotta cast this doc.
So who do you have, when you guys, Amanda Knox, who would play Amanda?
Are we, yeah, we got to pull up the actual movie that happened too. Which
oh
is so
yeah,
funny.
That's right. So there was a movie that came out in 2011 where Hayden Panettiere plays Amanda Knox, who, you know, just being young and blonde, I think, was all the qualifications
required. I wouldn't have...
Not the first choice I would have gone with.
Thought about her, but I thought about... And some of this was... Okay, so my casting is a little bit all over the place tonally, so that's I'm right, not yeah. sure.
That's how this game works.
It was a fun thing to think about. But I thought Cara Delevingne actually physically looks like her. She is a model, and she was in
Of,
or Paper Towns.
Oh, she was in that weird... Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really good. I
think
she
looks like it. And she has like kind of the... I think that she would actually do a good job with it.
Oh, yeah.
So there's something about Amanda Knox that even like throughout the documentary, she was just sort of like... I think she's wise about what she went through. I think she's sort of able to talk about it in a very intelligent way. And obviously she works for the Innocence Project, so she is like talking about these issues a lot. But there is just like very, like, I don't want to use the word innocence, but there's like almost like still a naivete with how she is. You know, she just seems like this young, I don't know.
Yeah, so I can see that.
I feel like I thought Cara would be good at
that. Oh, yeah. I was thinking of a young Selma Blair.
I just love Selma Blair. I would watch her do anything.
Yeah, I do too. I've always been a big fan, and like she has that kind of like pretty, but with like, you know, the wheels are working. Uh-huh. You know, she seems very smart.
Yes,
she seems present. She's pretty. She has the blue eyes, and you know.
Yeah. I like that.
I didn't have a casting for Amanda because I just, you know, Hayden Panettiere. Knocked it out of the park. No, I was kind of going with some other side characters. I got a Nick Pisa. I think Craig Ferguson.
Did
you think too? Yeah.
Because not only do they have a physical similarity in how they look, but Craig Ferguson playing that character.
Oh yeah, just like his like scenery chewing would be.
That's
really good. Because I was thinking of the guy Bones that played Bones.
Oh, David Boreanaz.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Angel.
Angel. I mean, listen, if you just want him to be just hot.
Yeah, right.
I don't think Nick Pisa deserves that. Yeah. He deserves...
He's a handsome man.
He was a handsome... I was distressed. I was like, you're so gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gross guy.
Truly gross. He... I was also thinking of...
Hugh Grant?
Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I see that.
Like, smarmy, well, but in control of the smarmy Grant.
Hugh Laurie, too.
Ooh.
Could another Hugh could pull that?
Yeah,
off.
That's true. He doesn't do a lot of villains.
No, he doesn't.
That could be interesting.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, what was?
Oh, yeah, House is a
what
villain.
What was House?
I guess,
not
yeah.
a villain.
Yeah. That's true. But he sort of redemptive villain. Yeah.
But I think scenery chewing is the operative term here because someone would have to just be like, I mean, it would be fun to see Hugh Laurie get the chance to do something like that.
Yeah,
just
it
be
would.
A total.
He's a great actor.
Dick.
Yeah, he could pull that off. What about our boy Giuliani Mieni?
I got two for that.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can go first.
Straight up James Gandolfini.
Oh.
Right?
Whoa.
Yeah,
and or the guy from the E Street Band who was also in The Sopranos.
Oh, wow. Little Steve Van Zandt?
Steve Van Zandt. How interesting.
I also had...
You went full Sopranos.
I want to see the like gravitas of the... I want like a true Italian like... You know, James Gandolfini was such a great actor and a good person for what we know. And like, but he was so good at just being like a truly gross dude.
Yeah, he was. I love The Sopranos. It's probably my favorite TV show.
I mean.
The Sopranos.
How do you top it?
I don't know. I don't know.
Gandolfini was also the producer on the HBO version of Night Of. With Riz.
I didn't know.
So it's really
that.
Interesting because that parallels a lot of things. And it's like.
A great show.
Long Shot or some other, like, you know, like. Innocent, falsy innocence.
Yeah, like he might have been really interested in doing it.
I for Giuliana Mignini, I first was thinking Anthony Hopkins.
Ooh.
But that's like so, there's something so bumbling about him that I downgraded Yeah. To Toby Jones. If you know who Toby Jones is.
I don't know who Toby Jones is.
Toby Jones. Let me find the picture of him.
Yeah,
he's more bubbly.
Anthony Hopkins
for
is,
sure.
I don't think, can pull
this guy,
off.
He also plays, like, he's a character actor.
Yes,
he's
the,
always,
of course,
like,
I know who that is now.
This guy, Toby Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Detectorist.
Definitely.
I think he'd be pretty amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Here's my, not to take issue with your hypothetical casting, because it's not a big deal, but
okay.
I felt
take him to task.
So, yeah. I think that I don't want him to be funny.
Uh-huh.
Oh. He was so vindictively terrible at his job that I think that's why I went Gandolfini. I was like, I want it to be like, this guy is fully in control of his evil and doesn't care.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, he is willing to ruin a young woman's life because, remember at one point he said she's so proud?
Yeah.
I was like, pot, kettle, what is happening?
Yeah.
Just all the misogyny of Italy just coming down.
But like the spanning over the Catholic, I was just like, I was raised Catholic, so this is where this is coming from. I was just like, I know what you mean, and I don't like
so
any of this.
So judgmental. At the
bad.
End when he was like, well, if she's innocent, then, you know, I hope she has a great life. But if she's guilty, may the heaven and hell open.
And there is a final judgment coming, and there are no appeals for that. I was like, what the fuck?
I know. It's like, dude, get over yourself. It's not like his life was ruined.
He got promoted.
He got fucking promoted. So, like, you know what, dude?
Oh, and that's what you should isolate is his line where he was like, oh my God, I wrote it down because it was so batshit. He said, oh, some of the Italians had good lines. They were like quoting Cicero and stuff.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Oh, but this is not going to work well on the podcast if it's an Italian.
Oh, no. Well, that's, oh my God, you're right.
The translation.
There's no subtitles.
But what's the translation?
Blah, 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 blah. I don't. Oh my gosh. He said that Amanda Knox had an anarchic attitude. I don't know if you have that in Seattle. One can imagine, but I'll just stick with the facts.
What if he was just like, you know, with your grunge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or your Pearl Jams and your Soundgardens.
It was so condescending and so, I was like, oh, this guy just hates Americans. Okay. He said,
he does.
Yeah.
Well, we do have Olive Garden.
Fair.
Oh. It's fair.
Yeah. He said, they say no one is a prophet in his own country. That hasn't been my experience.
Oh,
and then
fuck.
Talked about how everyone in their town was congratulating him, about how people see him in the street and hug him and tell him he did such a great job. I was like, that's so knowing about your own evil.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem like, I was like, that's stone cold.
Mm-hmm.
So Gandolfini saying that would be freaking amazing.
Do you have anything that you would love to see made into a documentary?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my thing. I'm going to say this even though I am actively considering doing a documentary. I'm pitching this as a show.
This is a get for us.
Yeah,
this is a get. Yeah.
Like, if anybody hears this and wants to help me actually produce this, please at me.
That's and we get a co-production credit.
Yeah,
that's why we do this.
No, I'll bring you on to do the after show.
Okay. We just want 2% on the back end. Let's just give us
just points. That's all we want.
Just points, man.
Do you guys know who I mean when I say Thomas Kinkade, the painter?
Of course.
The painter of light.
I just got yes, I'm sorry.
That guy, if no one knows who he is, or if you're not familiar, he has like kind of schmaltzy, kitschy, you know, they're like beautifully painted, but it's like about cottages. Like there's one of his main pieces is called Vatican Sunrise.
Mm.
That gives you a sense. And he partnered with Hallmark and Disney and made a fortune selling his paintings on QVC and in dedicated galleries that were like in malls he had a direct sale business that made him like something like $250 million a year.
Wow.
But by the end, and he was hyper Christian, very vocal about it. His inspiration came from God. He married his high school sweetheart, all this stuff. But at the end of his life, he was a full blown alcoholic. He had split up with his wife and was living with his girlfriend who accused him of physical abuse. He died of a mix of alcohol and Valium at the age of 52 in 2012. And he had a habit of ritual marking, which means pissing wherever you want and screaming about it publicly. He interrupted a Siegfried and Roy concert at some point, screaming codpiece and interrupting the performance until his mom and wife quieted him down. Like, he was out of his mind. And he was sued by many, many, many people who said that he manipulated their Christian faith to encourage them to do bad business deals that ended in them going bankrupt from having opened Thomas Kinkade galleries while he short sold his stock, then bought the company back, took it off the market, and like, you guys, it's unending.
George's face, you couldn't see it.
That's wow. Sound. My obsession with it is that we're in the scammer moment, and this is the ultimate scammer, and it's not a millennial. Because right. I'm sick of people acting like the millennials invented scamming.
Right, no. What would you call this documentary?
Oh, okay, a friend of mine, Alyssa Sussman, I just want to give her credit for this because it's so good. She, when I was telling her this story, she came up with paint soft, live hard. That wouldn't work. Yeah. Like the name of it, but that's the tag.
The crusty brush.
<That's> like awesome. Painter of Lies was what someone else came up with for it. I don't know, but I'm obsessed with the story. I think it's worth revisiting. This is like known, but it hasn't been like discussed at the level that I think it
is. There like a New Yorker piece or anything?
There's a New Yorker piece, and there's a bunch of great LA Times pieces about it actually. And when he passed away, he was in the Bay Area, so he's kind of a California guy.
Yeah, he painted a lot of San Francisco nightscapes. Mm-hmm. And stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I posted a Thomas Kincaid painting on Facebook maybe a month or two ago as a joke, and I got so many people who were just like, is that Thomas Kincaid?
Oh my God, that's so funny. Yeah. Like,
this is why you can't like get away with like making fun of things on the internet.
Right. Yeah. No, I can't.
You can't troll because you're unironically putting Thomas Kincaid pictures up on your Facebook.
Yeah. I can't get away. People want me to be nice. They just want me to be a nice person. I was going to say,
they actually think you're an NPR host. They think you just like soft lighting night shots in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. You're just getting painted into a corner of being a nice dude.
I know. I am. That's
sorry,
the problem.
Sorry, buddy. Mm-hmm.
That's
sorry.
All right. Okay. I have some questions for you. What's your hometown?
That's an interesting question for me because I moved around a bunch. I've never lived anywhere longer than 6 years. So Seattle is where I have spent, that's where my family is. So I'll tell people I'm from Seattle. But I went to high school in San Jose, and that is a big
That's a theme that has come up with Mayhem also. Yeah. Wait, what high school in San Jose?
Leland High School.
My fucking three of my siblings went to Leland.
Are you serious?
Yes.
What years?
A 22-year gap between them. So, probably no on any side, but 1978. Maybe some teachers.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, maybe some teachers are still there.
Yeah.
From the time you were there. Yeah,
that's so interesting.
Yeah, I lived in Almaden part-time, yeah.
Yeah, oh my God, A-Town.
Yeah. Never heard it called that ever.
I regret saying
it. And you went to an all-boys school.
Yeah, but that Bellarmine? Wasn't in Almaden. Yeah, that wasn't in Almaden, yeah.
Yeah, Bellarmine. I knew a lot of people that went to Bellarmine.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Okay. Different era, I'm pretty sure, but...
That's so
Some
funny.
Some comedians went to Bellarmine.
Really? Okay, yeah, we'll talk about this off mic, but that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. A person you're most mistaken for.
Ooh. Okay. This doesn't happen to be that much. I get mistaken for people's friends, or like I have the kind of face where people are like, I've met you before, and I'm like, no, I just look Julie. Very generically white.
Right.
That's what people from San Jose get a lot. Apparently they also learn this from our other friend. Yeah.
It's truly like I've had people sit down, I'm like eating alone at In-N-Out, and they sit down and they're like, we went to high school together. And I'm like, we absolutely didn't, and I'm sorry, like I just look like someone you know. But then when I worked at this candy store, I had a guy be like, I don't know if anyone's ever told you this, but you look exactly like Courtney Thorne Smith.
Oh,
I was like, I will take that compliment seriously. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's awesome. Pet peeve.
Oh my God, I have a lot of them. Lately, it's been people not blowing their nose. They keep sniffing, and they should just blow their nose.
Oh, interesting.
I'm just going to put that out in the universe. Everyone, just take a napkin and take care of it.
Dusty in LA, man.
Yes, it's dusty. It's allergy season, but like take care of it.
Guilty pleasure?
Well, I don't believe in guilty pleasures. I'm very like what you like. I write young adult fiction, so that's part of it. Like people are like, oh, well, sometimes I read young adult for fun. And I'm like, well, it's literature too. If you're reading a book, it's a book. Great. But maybe I'll say... nothing comes to mind at the moment.
Not Hammer.
It's not a pet peeve. Oh, my cat. Okay, maybe posting cat videos.
Okay, what do you never travel without?
Ooh. So I picked up the habit of sleeping with earplugs and an eye mask. I started doing that at Burning Man because you need to like block out all the techno in order to sleep well. And I still now like it's such a it helps. So much with sleeping well. So I will never travel without my earplugs and my eye mask.
And the next question is, do you have a pet? And
I do, a cat named Hammer.
Celebrity crush.
Ugh. How to narrow it down. Okay, I will say I went to go see Shazam.
New podcast.
Yeah, I would legitimately talk about that forever. I went to go see Shazam. Did you guys see Shazam?
No, but the dude, is it Zachary Levi?
Zachary Levi, and he's a cutie, but at the end of the movie, Adam Brody shows up.
Oh.
He's like...
The OC.
Yeah, and he has been just, like, ever since the OC, he is like... Dream.
Okay. Has he been so like in love with him? Getting
he was pretty
a pumped up, or?
But he was also wearing a suit, so I feel like you never know. But he, I hope the only reason I want there to be any continuation of the Shazam franchise is that I think Adam Brody would have a bigger role in the second movie, and he needs to be working more. He's funny and cute.
And lastly, where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Oh my gosh, you guys, that's an intense question. I think I will still be in LA. I think I will still be writing books, but hopefully I'm a little bit more into either podcasting things or writing for TV. I would like to do that.
Awesome.
So, yeah. I mean, you have some IP now that could always be converted into a series.
I'm working on making that IP, baby. Mm-hmm.
What's give us a title of one of your books.
Yeah. Tell Me Everything is the first book. It just came out in February. It's a really fun contemporary book, young adult contemporary book. It's funny. So if you are looking for a fast beach read, I would say that's a good one. And then I can't talk about the other ones that are coming up yet. They haven't technically sold. But I am writing more books, so hopefully there will be more on that in the future.
And where can people find you online?
I am at Sarah Enni, S-A-R-A-H-E-N-N-I, everywhere it's possible to be. Twitter, Instagram, I'm most active there, so you can definitely find me there at sarahenni.com. And then please check out the First Draft podcast with Sarah Enni at First Draft Pod on Twitter and Instagram. If you search my name, Enni, in iTunes, it's the only thing that comes up. So that's the way to go.
Those will be in the show notes, so people will be able to follow that. Thank you so much for being on SupDoc, Sarah. This was awesome.
This was a blast. Thank you guys for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com.
We've been recapping reality since 2015.
Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show was engineered by Will Scoville.
For as little as $1 a month, you can donate to this show through our Patreon page, patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you want to help us out in other ways, please share the show with friends. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Find out more about Paco and George's comedy gigs on the About Us page on our website.
SupDoc is by Doc fans for Doc fans. So if you want to advertise with SupDoc, got a film you want to recommend, or any opinions, please hit us up.
Email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.